Hi, folks. Steve Urban here, host of the Riderflex podcast and founder and CEO of our day job, recruiting firm Riderflex. We hope you enjoy this episode. And as a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast for updates and news. Finally, if you haven't already, check out the series of books we've published on hiring, interviewing, and overall career advice titled The Riderflex Guide, available on Amazon. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Most homeowners don't have the time or expertise to properly take care of their home, which causes costly issues to arise. That's where Kura Home Maintenance comes in. We're a full-service, routine maintenance company that was developed by a certified home inspector. Each quarter, we service our clients' homes following manufacturers' recommendations to properly maintain all the necessary appliances. We provide the materials and expertise to prolong the life of your property, creating a healthy and efficient environment for your family. From top to bottom, we'll maintain and service your home. To get started, we have a property inspection to determine what needs to be maintained, and a maintenance plan is created based on your preferences. From refrigerator coils to filters, vents, and drains, we do it all, and we do it well. Contact us today for your free routine maintenance inspection. And never worry about your maintenance again.
Whitney Hamm on the Riderflex podcast. Hello, Whitney. How you doing?
Hello, doing well. Thanks for asking and having me.
Yeah, you bet. For the listeners or for the viewers, I'm not in my normal studio today. I'm in my traveling RV studio with the blurred screen. So I don't have my fancy background on. We're working kind of remotely this week. But I'm sure that most people that listen to this or that watch slash listen to the show, they probably just listen anyway. They probably don't want to look at my face the whole time. So it probably doesn't matter. So Whitney, before we get into Spartan Investment Group, I want to know all about Whitney. Tell me everything. Now's the time to tell us the whole story. Family, mom, dad, where you grew up. Give us some background.
Oh, the whole story of me. Okay. I grew up in Illinois, not Chicago. Everyone always asks that. It's like, nope, yeah. Not Chicago. Small, okay. Smaller city on the border of Illinois and Iowa. One home all my life, didn't move around too much. My dad held multiple roles in law enforcement. My mom worked for the state for the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. And so both had pretty, you know, demanding jobs and tough jobs and, you know, grew up with some good values. Probably that they learned in their very structured careers. I have two siblings, one older brother and one older sister. I am the baby. And so was the last to head out to college for about 4 years because my siblings are 4 and 5 years older. So I was the last one out of the nest and went off to college. I went to Monmouth College in Illinois. I played soccer there. Definitely
cool.
Very rewarding experience. Played soccer all my life. Loved it.
Athlete. All right.
And so, yeah, once I left Monmouth, I actually went to get a degree in education. And I did my student teaching for a junior class in high school and decided this isn't really for me and kind of didn't necessarily have to shift majors, but had to decide what I wanted to do. And so right out of college, it was tough because I graduated in 2010. So it was right after the housing bubble. And I got a job in minor league baseball where I stayed for a couple of years working as kind of the HR person, business manager person for the hospitality side of things.
Cool.
And then kind of decided if I was going to grow anymore, I really found a passion for like both the business and HR piece of things.
Okay.
And kind of decided, hey, if I'm going to grow anymore at this, I probably need to go get a master's degree because, you know, a history major probably isn't going to find much out there. And so, yeah, I went and I got my master's. Actually, I went overseas to the UK and got my master's at Bournemouth University. That took about a year and a half. And I came back and also got back into the sports industry again. I'm back into the kind of HR field. Learned a lot about operations in baseball and kind of just had been, that was still on the Illinois-Iowa side. And so after that, decided that with my husband that we were going to move to Colorado and moved out here in 2016, I want to say. I think it was 2016.
Okay.
And been here ever since. Kind of shifted from the sports world to the real estate world, and it's been super exciting. I really like it. So here I am.
Let me ask you, now your dad was a law enforcement, so was it pretty strict at home? I mean, you know, around your house with your siblings and you, was it pretty strict, or was he more relaxed? How was he?
My dad was actually the more relaxed one. My mom is definitely, and still to this day, is the authority in the house.
How about that? Wow. Okay. And did you get away with more than your siblings because you were the baby? Did you get, you know?
I mean, they would tell you, yes. I mean, yeah, but probably so. Definitely probably so.
Did you get in any trouble? Did your dad have to call some friends and get you, you know, out of something, out of some trouble, like, you know, get you released from the back of the cop car or anything? Anything cool?
Just once.
Oh, seriously?
But my mom came and got me.
What happened? What happened?
Luckily, it was close to Christmas, so my dad was forgiving quickly. I was just, you know, at a party and the cops showed up and I was only 17. They let the 18-year-olds go home, but everyone else got a free ride in the back of a cop car and a tour of the police station.
Did the cops, did they know who you were?
It was in a different city, but they knew who my dad was, yes.
Did you say, hey, my dad is...
I did eventually tell them, yes. I knew it was going to get to him one way or the other.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. That's pretty good. Is that the worst thing you ever did?
That's probably the most trouble I've ever gotten in. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's the worst thing you got caught for. I got it. I understand.
Yeah, that too. That too.
Very, very good. Appreciate you sharing that with me. Why the UK for your master's degree? How'd that even come about?
Well, I knew I wanted to go and get my master's, and my husband now, he wasn't my husband at the time, he is self-employed. He is a professional poker player, and
that's a whole nother that starts a whole nother set of questions, but go ahead.
Yeah, he does probably 80% of his work online, and at one point the U.S. you know, hadn't really figured out how to tax the online poker ecosystem and those earnings. So they shut it all down. Okay. And he had no way to make an income. And I wasn't really planning on working full time or anything while I pursued this master's. And so we started looking at avenues to where I could get my degree overseas, and definitely knew I only speak really English. So we needed it to be an English course, like an English speaking curriculum. And so the UK just seemed like a good fit for us.
Where'd you live?
I lived in Bournemouth, England. And so it's on the south coast, right on the sea.
Okay. Now you guys moved over there together, not being married or married?
Not being married.
Not being married. Okay. So let me see how this goes. Hey, mom, dad, I'm going to move with this guy. We're not married yet. And oh, by the way, he's a gambler for a living.
We had been dating for 4 or 5 years at that point.
Okay.
We met in college. But yeah, that was definitely one that I was like, so how am I going to tell my parents what you do for a living?
Yeah, right. Wow.
Yeah, we met in college, though. You know, he has a degree in economics and finance, and had a job lined up out of college in being a financial advisor. And everything kind of in the housing market and real estate market was tanking at that time. So it really decreased the need for those. So he just he's done it since I've known him, and kind of just kept pursuing the path.
Okay. I won't ask you too many more questions. We'll have to get him on the show to ask him direct questions, but just a couple more on that particular topic. He so that's what he does full time. Like when he gets up for the day, like his job is okay, I gamble and then I stop and then we have life. And I mean, this is a regular job.
Yep, in addition to being a wonderful dad and spending a lot of time with our daughter, he does. There's a lot of study to it. So I would say, and he does some coaching too, and he has a coach. So there's a lot of study and coaching aspect to it. But yeah, a good time of it is spent playing online and
Does
that
he
we're studying.
make more money than you a year? I gotta know.
I can't reveal all the secrets.
Okay. All right. Very cool. All right. How'd you guys meet anyway? Oh, you met in college.
Yeah.
Okay. What were you at a party and he like came he's noticed you from across the room? What happened? How'd you get
It was free hot dog night at the bar, and a friend of mine introduced me to him. She was like her neighbor in the apartment complexes on campus,
Okay.
and we were playing darts, and I needed a partner, and she introduced me to him, and he was my partner that night. It's all history.
There you go. There you go. You said children, I think. How many kids?
Just one
Just one. Boy, girl.
girl, she is 7.
You got a 7-year-old. Okay. Oh, that's the perfect age. Hey, that's before puberty. It's before all of the rolling of the
She
eyes
still
and
loves me. Yeah. She still
stick at the
wants to
hugs
be
and
around us, so we'll take it.
yeah. That's great. I was, I think from like four, from 4 to like 11 is really good. Like right in there, four to
It's
11.
a
You're in.
yeah, it's been fun. Like it's all her
Yeah.
ages have just such fun parts of them.
I would love to tell you that it's going to be all rosy when she gets to be a teenager, but it won't all be rosy, just so you know.
Oh, I know what I was like, so I imagine it's coming.
It's, yeah. But anyway, yeah, you're in the golden years right now. Okay, very cool. All right, thank you for sharing all that with me. Oh, by the way, why the Denver move? I don't know if I heard or not, but was there a particular reason? Was it do you just the mountains, family, outdoors? What was that move for?
Yeah, kind of more mostly the great outdoors. I took a lot of family vacations as a kid to Colorado.
I see.
My husband and I took a couple of trips to Colorado when we were dating and just love every aspect of it. So really wanted to, for a long time, make our way out here. And so once I found a job out here, we headed out.
And how do you feel about it now? From 2016 to now, it's been quite a shift with the population and things exploding. You still feel good about it?
I do. I miss my family because they're all in Illinois. I get to see them still a decent amount. The main thing I miss, though, is my family. I'm still
Okay.
super happy with my location. Like, I love it
Okay.
here. The traffic's definitely a burden, but I can look past that.
And how about your husband? Is his family in Illinois as well, or where's his family?
Yep, also from Illinois. They're closer to Chicago and the suburb areas.
Okay.
But yep, all in Illinois.
But you guys are the cool couple. You're the couple that lives in
Yeah.
Colorado where everybody wants to go, right?
Yeah, we get some good visits, so.
Yep. My wife and I are the same. Everybody thinks we have some glamorous life or whatever because we live in Colorado. I'm like, yeah, I guess we. It's awesome. I don't know. I don't know if I'd say it's glamorous, but yeah. But you know that
I don't
you've
find it any more glamorous, but
right. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, it's awesome, for sure. Are you mountain couple, or do you go to the mountains? Do you do stuff in the mountains, or no? Anyhow.
yeah, we love to camp in the summer and fall. We got my daughter into snowboarding this winter. I'm unfortunately done for the season. I dislocated my shoulder a few weeks back snowboarding. So, but yeah,
Oh.
we're a winter sports and camping family. Corinne, my daughter.
A few weeks back, you look like you don't even look like you're in pain. What kind of
Oh
meds you on
yeah,
right now?
good physical therapist.
Did you know you dislocated it right away? Like as soon as you fell, were you like, oh shit, yeah, I know
Oh
it's
yeah. Oh yeah. I
did
knew.
you?
I've never
Oh.
done it before, but I figured that was what had happened.
Oh man. Okay. Well, sorry about that. So you're done for the season. Okay. Well, so. You go into this HR world, suddenly you're like, okay, I guess I'm an HR professional.
Yep.
you had a few different, you had a few different stops along the way before Spartan, right? A couple of different, a few different spots. Let's skip past those into how did you get to Spartan?
Yeah. So when I first came to Colorado, I was working for one of the largest, you know, hospitality and catering companies in Colorado. And I worked there for about 3 years and it was great. I always love hospitality culture and the service industry. Luckily, I did get out of it before COVID. But ultimately, I found that hospitality doesn't have the same amount of growth enablement.
Enablement. What is that? What does that even mean? Growth enablement.
Like I can't, like there's no structure really in place for me to grow. Professionally, All right. Personally, you know, there's no way to climb the ladder in a lot of ways. And so I ultimately resigned from there and decided to start looking for something new. And I came across a real estate investment company that was in its infancy. And the role itself, I was like, well, I don't have real estate experience, but the role itself sounds, you know, really interesting. I'd be the only HR person building their systems from the ground up. Sounds, you know, exciting. Mm-hmm. And I started on with DRG and worked there for a little over 3 years. And when I started, it was, you know, less than 10 people. And when I left, it was, you know, around 120 to 130 people.
Wow. And busy. So that's a busy HR department.
Yes. And so when I started, it was just me. When I left, I had a small team and I had found Spartan at that time. And they had a similar setup. It was very similar to where I had been. And I knew I wanted to continue on in real estate. It was just, I love the business aspect of everything as well. I'm a very business oriented HR leader. And so I really liked that, you know, it was on the executive team and that you got to make more of a strategic impact and the benefits were great. And almost like the package that seemed too good to be true kind of thing. And I think I was one of the first applicants and I was the one that was hired. And so from there, I think I was employee number 30 to 40 something at Spartan. And we're around 150 now in just over 2 years.
Sweet.
So it was like a similar boat to where I came in and had to kind of build the people systems from the ground up. And
that's awesome.
In that time, I've now, you know, have a team of five at Spartan to kind of lead the people and culture.
Wow. Nice. What a great experience for you. That's your second time in kind of a high growth situation, right? Yes. In your career. Yeah. Wonderful. Plus you got to switch industries, which makes you a lot more well-rounded and you're not pigeonholed into one industry. Awesome. Great. Great for your career. Plus you got the big executive VP title, which is also nice.
Yeah.
And you report right to the CEO, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Scott.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Scott was on the podcast.
Yeah, I think he referred you over to me.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, great experience for you. Congratulations. And hell, you're still young. What you're not even 30 yet, are you?
Ha, thank you. We'll go with that. No, I actually just turned 36.
Wow, you're doing great. Congratulations. You're just moving right along. Yeah, great. Very good for you. And then what are you thinking? But are you thinking I guess you don't have the chief people officer title or the chief human resource officer title, but that's basically the job you're doing. What do you foresee? Do you want to be like, you know, CHRO for a Fortune 500 company? What's the plan?
The plan would hopefully be to continue growing Spartan as large as we can. And
you can tell me after we hit the record.
But
stop
ultimately,
recording.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be a chief people officer, chief human resources officer. And I think that's a possibility for me at Spartan. I think it's a matter of whether I want to continue to grow into larger companies or, you know, really stay focused on a smaller company and see where it can go and take it. Right now, I'm still learning and developing. And so I am, good at working towards that chief people seat throughout Spartan. But if I, it, honestly, I don't think that if I left Spartan, I would probably want to start try something on my own, run my own business. I ultimately, I don't know if you're familiar with Patty McCord, but she was the chief people officer at Netflix. And she has a very strong business background acumen. And Netflix actually, I think, invited her to be their COO because she had reached the end of her growth as the chief people officer and chief human resources officer. So I actually find that a very intriguing seat as well, because I love the business and operational side of things. So I think if I left Spartan, I may want to dabble in something on my own.
How about that? Now, your husband probably runs all of his stuff under an LLC of some kind that you guys have together, I'm assuming.
Runs it under like an individual LLC. And then, I don't know, he's got like a special tax accountant and everybody that helps him make sure that stays, because gambling earnings are a little bit different than traditional revenue.
Yeah. But he's kind of an entrepreneur, I guess, is, so I see. And you know, isn't that interesting? You went in a totally different direction than your parents, right? You know, a completely different direction. Not that that's good or bad. I just find that interesting. You know, a lot of times people will follow their parents, but were not entrepreneurs, right? And they didn't work for big companies, and you went that direction. Did your siblings, what'd they end up doing? I'm curious.
My sister went to school for physical therapy, so she's a physical therapist. Okay. And then my brother had pretty fun route. He kind of went the more traditional route and followed my dad. He joined the military, did a couple of tours, was in law enforcement, and then recently he is now transitioning fields and is in PA school, physician assistant school. And so he's actually in his clinicals right now for that, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
No, actually now my siblings are both on the medical side and
okay. All right, cool. All right. So let's talk about the world of HR right now. I got a bunch of questions for you. Let's dive into some HR stuff. I got some interesting things. See which ones you're willing to answer while the camera's rolling. Let's start with AI and some specific topics around AI. We're recording this. What is today? Today's February 28th, 2024. AI is all the rave, right? You know, right now, and affecting so many industries, companies, jobs, all of us. In fact, I can't even keep up with it, Whitney. I wake up every day and there's something new I'm supposed to figure out how to use.
Skynet, it's coming.
Right? Where is Sarah Connor? Please, Sarah, come help us. How do you feel about AI being used on the hiring side by the employer, the hiring managers, on your side of the business? How do you feel? And what I mean by that is using it to, I don't know, analyze resumes, using it to build job descriptions, using it to grade resumes, et cetera. How do you feel about it? And what are you guys currently doing?
Yeah, AI is super exciting. As an organization, we've really made it our focus. Each team department has really been tasked with finding 4,000 man hours saved through AI. And so my team has really dived into that right away. And it's super exciting stuff. Like it can be scary just because of what it could potentially do to a workforce. But at the same time, you'll be left behind if you don't start figuring it out. And so our team, we use it to help create job scorecards, help create 90-day onboarding plans, help create those job descriptions, come up with good KPIs. Our applicant tracking system actually has quite a few AI tools built into it. So it's doing a lot of that filtering and scanning of resumes for us. And so that's a great component of it. One of the things that we're really working on right now that will be a huge productivity and time saver for my team, and once other teams can build it, potentially for them too. But we are building a chatbot, so an HR chatbot that, you know, all of the general questions, because we're a small company, so people is also IT. And so we have a lot of just questions on where does this live or where can I find this? What training do we have for this? What are my health benefits? How do I access my health benefits? You know, all these like thousand little questions that you get each month. You don't even realize, because you're on autopilot responding to these things, how much time it's actually taking from you. And so we're building a chatbot that is, you know, more conversational, where people can go to and just throw in all of those details and questions that they have. And so we're estimating that'll be like a 300 to 500 hour savings, if not more, for us per year. So we're making a dent in our 4,000 goal there.
Is that chatbot, if you don't mind me interrupting, I'm sorry, is that chatbot, so to speak, being built as a GPT in the ChatGPT store privately, or how are you building that?
Well, funny you should ask, I actually originally built it through ChatGPT using Zapier, ChatGPT, and just Telegram to kind of just create those webhooks, see if it works. And it did work. However, when any organization is like thinking about implementing these AI tools, it has to be something that really integrates well with your systems, which that kind of using Telegram as the interface wouldn't really work in our organization, because we're all on Microsoft systems and it requires people to get another app and another thing, which is what we want to eliminate. And so we've started really diving into Microsoft Copilot.
I see. Okay.
And so Copilot will enable you to build that kind of chatbot, as many chatbots as you really want, and put them in your SharePoint or Teams environment. So kind of the central employee interweb where everyone goes anyways, is where we would kind of put that chatbot.
Can I ask you this? I don't mean to go down this rabbit hole, but is Copilot talking to your ATS yet or no?
Not yet. Our ATS isn't Microsoft integrated.
Yeah.
So it is, it's not yet talking. Our anything with open API, you can always dabble in hooking them. I just haven't tried.
Bingo. So let me pause right there. So yeah. So as you know, Riderflex, I'm sure you probably know this, our day job here is a recruiting and staffing firm beyond the podcast. I don't know if you knew that or not, but so that's what we do for a living, is hire people for clients. And so we have been working hard. In fact, I have a meeting this afternoon to review where we're at. We've been working hard to integrate, or I don't know if integrate is the right word, connect ChatGPT to our ATS. And like you said, you know, all ATSs to a certain degree have their own kind of AI, right? Like filters and crap you can use, right, to sort candidates. But if I can get GPT talking to my ATS, and I can just be like, hey, out of the 400,000 candidates we have in our ATS, who's the 5 best salespeople to match this new job search I got? Boom, done.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, I want that. And I got a guy working on that right now. Matter of fact, I told him, I'm like, look, man, figure out how to make ChatGPT talk to our ATS. Please, hurry.
Let me know if you figure it out, and I'll do the same.
Seriously, right? And that's what I told him. I'm not kind of joking around, but that's the analogy I'm using. I want to be able to, if a client hires us for a new search, I want to be able to go, hey, ChatGPT, we just got a new search. Who in the system matches this? Boom. You know, so we're working on it. I'll keep you posted. If the guy does well on it, I'll introduce him to you. He's an outside resource I'm using. I'll connect you. Yeah. And he's cheaper too. He's not like super expensive.
That's important.
But I think that's really good. Okay. How about the candidates? Do you know, isn't it? I'm fascinated by how some people are balking at this and some people are grabbing a hold of it. And by the way, I totally agree with you. If you don't grab a hold of it and embrace it, you're going to be left behind. Couldn't agree more.
100%.
But some people are still balking at it, right? I've had old school recruiters, some that used to work for me that no longer do, that would be like, well, I can tell that they wrote that cover letter with ChatGPT. And I'm like, I don't give a shit if they wrote it with ChatGPT. Like, if it's a great cover letter, I don't care if they used the tool to write it. In fact, and then I tell them, Whitney, oh, now I'm ranting. Sorry, I just got to rant about this for a second. I tell them, I say, did they use spell check from Word? Oh, it's okay to use spell check and grammar check from Microsoft Word, but they can't use ChatGPT for others. It's like, come on, man.
Or hire a resume writer.
It's like, come on. Like, what are we talking about here? Anyway, what was my point? My point was, yeah, how do you feel about the candidates using ChatGPT or Copilot for cover letters, redoing their resumes, even their emails that they're sending you? How do you feel?
I mean, it doesn't bother me. We definitely call it out when we think we see it, but it doesn't necessarily bother us, mainly being because, one, does it affect whether this candidate is an A player or a B player? Probably not. And if anything, it just tells me they are embracing the new technology. And honestly, if you've ever been a job searcher, like customizing your cover letter for every single role, tweaking little words on your resume for every single role is the most tedious thing. And if it can help a job seeker find the right fit faster and not have to do that tedious stuff, then more power to them. It doesn't bother me at all.
Totally agree. Isn't it interesting how we all, I don't know about all of us, but a lot of us do the whole calling it out thing. Like, even my recruiters, for some reason, we'll be in a team meeting or whatever, and they'll be like, they'll call it out. Like, I can tell this was, like, somehow that makes us all feel better because we called it out.
It's like, we're all using it, so.
Right? Totally. Oh, man.
Like, I know the newsletter that went out was ChatGPT. We had our own words, but.
All my emails. I got one now. I got one for my social media post that I wrote. I spent a lot of time on it, you know, training the GPT like I wanted it. And then I trained it on my writing, too. We've launched two books. So I put the books that we wrote, I put it in the I put the transcripts in, I put the podcast in, I put a bunch of my emails and a lot of my correspondence over the years. And so I trained the GPT to talk more like me.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wild.
You're just teaching it all the time.
Yep. And so now people really struggle at whether or not what I send them is ChatGPT generated. They can't tell. That's my goal. What about this one? Next question, switching gears. Some companies are using, at least in the front part of the process, they'll do a self-video interview portion. They'll ask the candidate to do 5-10 minutes on camera in the front end, maybe. You know, they'll still talk to them later, but maybe towards the front end, do a self-video interview. Any thoughts?
Funny you should ask that. We're actually considering implementing something similar. Anytime we implement something new to our process, I try and be really cognizant of the implementation. Sure. And just how many stages and steps and things we do have for our candidates. So we haven't implemented it yet. And we're thinking about maybe doing more like 2 to 3 minute videos just to see how they present. And so we're looking at that. We have currently, when someone applies, before they get to talk to a person, we have like a 35 role specific assessment we have them take before we even get on the phone with them. And so we're trying to really figure out when that video would be most relevant. And in order to probably get that and to do the video in addition to the assessment, we probably need to talk to them first. So we're working on now, okay, if they pass this assessment, we speak to them on the phone, and then we have them put together kind of this package for the hiring manager for them to review before they interview with them. So we actually do plan to implement kind of that 2 to 3 minute video of just them kind of pitching themselves.
Love what you're doing. And we're doing something similar. I'll give you some, if you want some tips on what we've experienced so far, since you're about to, since you're getting the beginning stages of this.
That'd be great.
So we do self-video interviews, and we do assessments if the client wants us to use one, because all of our clients use something different: Culture Index, Wunderlich, DISC, blah, blah, blah. You know, so we implement whatever the client wants if they want an assessment. But yeah, you're right. a lot of candidates, especially at the executive level, or you know, let's call it VP level and up, they're like, okay, hold on, you want me to record a self video interview? Now I got to take an assessment before I ever talk to a human being. So a lot of candidates push on that a little bit. What we are learning is we will send them, you know, we'll send them the email, thanks for applying, blah, blah, blah. You've been selected to go to the next steps. And then I will hit them with a text and I'll say, hey, this is me, Steve, or my wife, which is, she's sitting right over here. She can hear me talking, or she'll send something and we'll say, hey, want to make sure you saw that email. That was a real email. This is not a scam. Will you please do the video interview portion? It's worded better than that, but basically the message is, this is a real person. Yes, please do the video interview. And hey, if you have questions, call me. Like, just call me and I'll walk you through it. And some of them call. But a lot of them will go ahead and then do it. If it's a really close matching resume, because we score resumes 1 to 5. So let's say it's a 5 match and I'm looking at them on paper going, holy crap, this person is a perfect, like, all right. And they don't respond to the self video interview, I will call them and I'll be like, hey, Johnny, did you see the email? Yeah, it's me. It's okay. You can do it. This is not a scam. Do the self video interview. And then they'll usually do it. Sometimes if I love them so much on paper, I'll just be like, hey, look, you can just bypass that. Just schedule with me right now. Video interview 2-way. And I'll skip it. So I won't, in short, I won't eliminate them if they won't do the self video interview portion, but I definitely try to get them to do it because it saves so much time.
What are reasons that they refuse?
Some of them think it's weird. People still getting used to it. You know, that's weird. I don't know. It's kind of weird. I've never done that before. Or I thought that might be a scam, or, you know, you're going to take my face and put it on a porno video or some crap, like, you know, something weird. It's like, okay, bro, no, it's okay. You know? And so, but more and more people are doing it. More and more people are doing it. Now, if we also have to do an assessment after they do the self video interview, I will definitely call. I'll definitely get them on the phone and I'll say, thank you so much for doing that. Hey, before we do a 45-minute 2-way interview on Zoom and I waste your time with that, my client requires that you do an assessment. If you don't pass it, I can't put you through anyway. So to save us both time, do you mind doing this assessment real quick? That's how I've been doing them so far. So it's, but anyway, I love the self video interview portion because it tells you who's serious, because so many people are just apply the easy apply, right? On Indeed, they're just sitting there on their phone while they're having a beer at happy hour. Just apply. They don't even know what the hell they're applying for.
Yep.
And so if they do the self video interview, I know they're serious and that helps a bunch. And so I love it. And I also get to see the weird ones, right? I wish we could start a comedy YouTube channel.
There would probably be a good reel that you could splice together.
Oh my God.
Sometimes I wish I had some of the phone screenings we have recorded.
Some of them are so good, Whitney, you know. They're walking around the living room. Yeah, I was supposed to do this. You know, they're like in a t-shirt or something, you know, and it's great. Some of them are so, so great. Anyway, next question, next interviewing question. The job hopping has been bad for the last 10 or 15 years, I guess. But man, 80% of the resumes I see are changing jobs every 1, 2, 3 years. I mean, probably 80%. When I see a profile where somebody's been in the same job for 10 years, I'm like, wow.
Why are you leaving?
if a candidate has had 3 jobs in 3 years, do you automatically pass, or what do you do there? What's your rule?
I pretty much auto pass. If it's 3 jobs in 3 years, I'll pretty much auto pass.
2 jobs in 3 years?
2 jobs, pretty much auto pass. I want to see at least 2 years, usually.
Okay. Don't you love it when they say, well, I've been there a year and I've accomplished just about everything there is to accomplish?
Yeah, if I see someone like change industries and started a new path, or it looks like that every shift they made was for like the next level higher position, it doesn't bother me as much because that
I
tells me
see.
it's a relatively growth-oriented person or
I like that.
has the courage to shift industries. So I at least give them the opportunity to explore it. But if there's nothing like that on there and they're making lateral moves and each year, no, I'm pretty quick to pass on those.
Okay, yeah, I'd say I'm about the same. I'm pretty much about yeah, I'm about the same. Couple more. Can I ask you a couple more HR questions? Because me and you live the same life. I know recruiting's not your
Yeah.
only job, but diversity, equity, and inclusion. We'll see if you make me cut this out or whether or not you're going to answer. lately in the press now, there's pushback a little bit from some people, you know. It was of course all the rave. And now all of a sudden some powerful people are like, "Eh, maybe that's not such a great idea all the time." So now all of a sudden there's a little battle going on. What do you think, Whitney? What is your thought on the whole topic, I guess? And then I might hit you with a couple of specific questions.
Yeah, it's not something I think as HR professionals, we're kind of have it pushed at us a lot. And like, you should be doing this. You should have this. This is like, big as AI kind of thing. And to me, I just, it just seems like an extra function, like of things that we should be considering and doing anyways. I won't say that I'm a huge proponent of organized programs and structure surrounding DEI. I think a lot of those things should just be kind of in the back of your mind anyway. Some of your biases, some of your policies, just looking at those and looking at your workforce, and just kind of having that knowledge and awareness. Versus focusing on a specific program and initiative. I like to believe in hiring the most qualified person for the positions and seats that you have and not really tailoring it towards any specific diversity, equity, inclusion initiative, if that makes sense. I'm not really against it by any means, but it's not something I really see as an initiative to hit hard and pursue.
I want to tell you how I answered a client recently. We were trying to sell a contract for a new client, and it was like a panel meeting. We had to present, you know, we had to present, and we get hit with the question: How do you make sure diversity, equity, inclusion, blah blah blah? And I said, and this is exactly how I said it. I said, look, I said, here's the deal. You pay us to present the best qualified candidates we can find for the job you gave us. That's what I'm going to do. If you are specifically asking me, or if you ever specifically ask me to discriminate against a specific race, color, size, religion, whatever, if you ever ask me to exclude a specific group, we're no longer your vendor, because I'm not going to do that. I'm not going
Yeah,
to do
I would
that.
100% agree.
I'm not going to do that, you know. And that includes if you tell me, don't give me any white males, white older men, or whatever. Whatever it is you're trying to exclude, if you tell me that, our relationship is over. So,
Yeah, 100%. I think it's all about, the most qualified person for the seat. And like the big emphasis on DEI, you just really have to ask your question as an organization, is this something that we're willing to invest in, and will it give us that return? I don't want to like make it all about money, but there's ways to have diversity in your organization without having such the big emphasis on established programs and systems.
One more, lightening it up just a little bit. One more last HR recruiting question, then I want to ask you about Spartan. Will you pass on a profile if their LinkedIn profile sucks?
If they don't have a LinkedIn, I'll typically pass.
Tell the audience why, because I want to see if your answer is the same as mine for that.
How are you networking? How are you staying up to date on industry news? How are you really staying in tune with your peers in the world of business if you aren't on here? There's so much content and network connections, job openings, whatever the case may be in LinkedIn. And if you're not there, there's this whole level of exposure that you're missing.
I like that. Good answer. Yeah. You know, what I tell people is now we also have candidate services. So candidates pay us to give them career advice sometimes. That's not the bulk of our business. But if I get somebody on the phone, they're like, yeah, I don't really, you know, want to do that. And this is what I say. I'll say, Johnny, don't be weird. Don't be weird. Just don't be weird. You're being weird. Like, if you won't put your picture on there, that's another thing, by the way, for everybody listening to this episode, put your damn picture on there. Don't be weird.
It's just and that blue circle.
Yeah, it's a blue circle. Like, what are you trying to do? You know, and also, oh, one more thing. Don't make sure your picture is not 20 years old and 50 pounds lighter, because when you see people in person, they're like, what the hell? That's not even the same person as in the picture. Like, just stop doing that, people. Stop doing that. Okay. All right. I just wanted to lighten it up there a little bit. Okay. All right, let's talk about Spartan. Because I could talk to you about HR recruiting stuff for another 4 hours. So, what does Spartan Investment Group do? Tell the audience. Give us the elevator pitch. We're going to compare it to Scott's later on.
Well, we're a fully integrated real estate investment firm. Kind of our model is find, fund, and finish. And so we work with our investors to find properties. Primarily self-storage is our market. Okay. And we fund them with those investor dollars. And we also have two verticals, Free Up Storage and Spartan Construction Management Group, that we then take, and that's kind of the finish portion. We're taking on value add on the Spartan Construction Management side. So any of our deals that have room for development on the property that we've bought will build additional storage, which means additional revenue for those investors. And then SCM has also recently started serving third party. So now we're doing ground up storage development for third party outside of Spartan Investment Group as well.
Wow.
And then we have Free Up Storage, which we then use to provide the management services for those investment properties.
Whoa, and that sounds like that's three different revenue streams right there. You just described.
Yep, we've got a great little shop set up.
Okay, so let me make sure I heard this right. You're going to give me the money, you're going to give me the construction crew, and then you're going to provide services to help operate it.
Yes.
Wow.
First, you have to give us the money though for us to generate some returns for you.
Oh, I got to have a down payment. I thought you were going to cover 100%. What are you talking about? The operating service, the management service, whatever you're calling it there, I mean, that's recurring revenue. Now you're into the recurring revenue model a little bit.
Yes.
Ooh, that's attractive for people that are investing in your firm, right?
I think. Most of our operating cash is coming from Free Up Storage, the managing operations for the properties, and then Spartan Construction Management Group.
Do you have, okay, when it comes to operating the facilities, are you outsourcing that to another firm, or you're hiring your own little on-site managers and teams, or what are you doing there?
Yeah, we hire our own on-site teams, and that's kind of our Free Up Storage vertical. So that is and it's technically our largest vertical, even including SIG. So lots of property managers, regionals, districts. We have an operations team.
Wow.
It definitely requires the most maintenance and team members to maintain and operate those facilities.
Wow. So you, as the head of people there, that's where most of your employees are. They're not in the office and the investment side. They're out in the field running these places.
Yeah, I'd say free up. I mean, some of the free up team members are in the office, the operations team is, but we probably have about 60 to 70 property team members that are outside the office and
Wow.
kind of throughout the US.
Wow. Okay. I've always heard, I don't know anything about this, so I'm ignorant to how it works, but I've always heard that storage facilities are great investments for a whole host of reasons. I don't know them all. Is one of them because it's property that you can turn into something else later, or you can flip it later? What's the trick, Whitney? I don't know.
The big draw for investors like Spartan and obviously our investor partnerships that we have, the big draw really is storage historically has been recession proof. And so you look back in time through all the major recessions, and the demand for storage has either only gone up or stayed level. It's never really dropped with
Interesting.
any given recession. People just always have a
Stuff,
demand need for
stuff.
it. Yeah. And people got a lot of stuff. And so during COVID, especially when people were moving around, working remote, downsizing, storage facilities went way up, whereas a lot of the economy went way down.
I'm sure you guys are looking at this. All these empty office buildings that are empty because everybody works remote. Are you going to buy some of those up and convert them into storage facilities? I don't know.
That is an idea we've thrown around. We actually own at least one facility where whomever developer we bought it from had done that. It was like an old shopping mall that was turned into storage. And so that is something we always have a goal to go into another asset class or bring on a partnering business line that would complement really well. And so that's one idea that we have thrown around is seeking that out, especially as property has been harder to buy lately.
Do you have a YouTube channel for the storage wars where you open up the things that people that don't pay for them and you get the camera? Can you start a
Oh
little
man,
show?
our CIO, Ryan Gibson, he's our CIO. He's our marketing guy. He's got a podcast as well too. He would probably love something like that. We joke about it all the time, but he would
Totally.
probably love to do something like that.
What do you do with the stuff? Auction it off, or what do you do with it?
They do have auctions when they want people in the office to see what it's like to be boots on the ground. They send us out there to clean some storage units to humble us a little. But yeah, there's an auction process where you advertise it basically, and you auction off that unit, and someone comes and collects the stuff. But it's not for very, they don't auction for very much. It's not like Storage Wars where someone's like, yeah, I'm gonna give you $10,000 for that unit kind of thing.
Do the employees get first dibs? Can you guys go and be like, hey, I want that couch or whatever?
There's never been one that I've been in where I've wanted any of the stuff. I found some jars of fake teeth one time. That's fun.
I was going to
We
ask
had
you what was the
some.
most interesting thing you found. That must be towards the top.
Yeah, that was actually Scott, actually, that found the fake teeth. Most of my units were empty. I did find someone living in one, and so that was a little bit scary for a minute. I just walked away.
You open the door and the dude's in there.
It was already actually open, but it was a woman and she had all of her stuff set up. She had a little TV in there. She was charging her phone. I was just like,
We're like, hey, get out. You haven't paid.
no, I was like, I'm not qualified for this. I just went and told the property manager she knew what to do.
That's an interesting story. Wow. Okay. Pretty cool. One more question on this. Are you guys raising any cash? You taking on any outside investors, PE, VC, whatever, or you're good to go?
No, yeah, we're always raising. We started three funds last year and are just closed those. And so kind of determining now whether we want to continue the fund model and have people invest in funds or do more of a single syndication where we're buying this specific three pack of properties and we raise specifically for those. We find we get a lot more investor participation in that rather than the funds. Because people know right where there's money is going. They've seen the assets, they've seen the data. And so, yep, we are always looking to raise for additional purchases. We don't have any large equity capital partners right now.
Okay.
Most of our investors are just regular everyday folks, you know, doctors,
nice.
Dentists, pilots, people who are, you know, looking to save for retirement, put their kids through school, that kind of thing.
What's the minimum investment?
$50,000.
$50,000. Okay. All right. Pretty cool. Very good. Well, you're in an interesting line of work, not only from an HR perspective, but from the storage wars that you're doing.
Yes.
Oh, I mean, I forgot to ask you. You're investing in other types of properties too, though. Or no?
Right. We have a couple of RV parks. They came as part of storage. They came as part of storage deals. We're not seeking to buy any more of those.
Why? Can I ask you why? Because I've always, by the way, I'm in my traveling RV right now. My wife and I are on the road. So I'm in my RV. We're at an RV park right now. Why would you, they don't make money or what?
They make money. I think they're just more difficult to manage, or we don't really know how to manage them. So we're not like interested in stuff we're not good at. And so we're just, we would be good developers. That was our goal mainly, I think, is to develop the RV parks and then hand them off to someone else to manage them. And
tell tell Scott that I said, I will run my recruiting firm while running an RV park for him that he wants to invest in. And my wife and I will just travel around and check on him.
There we go. We'll give it a shot. I'll put that on the next proposal for next asset class. But yeah, just the difficult in management especially when you're trying to manage remotely, it's just difficult.
I got you. Okay. Whitney, thank you very much for coming on the show and chatting with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate your time as well. It's been fun.